Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush, and today's guest is Freight Royalty. When you look at his LinkedIn bio, he's invested in about a third of the companies I tend to love. He's also the CEO and founder of a company named Cargado. Matt Silver, welcome to Hammer Down.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, Matt, let's get right into it, man. Cargado, tell me about this company. What are you doing? What problems are you solving? Where'd the idea come from?
So we're the first invite-only load board for cross-border freight. So I've always hesitated to use the term load board because it comes with, you know, some dirty laundry, I guess, if you will, and or dirty baggage. But, you know, it's a marketplace ultimately. So freight brokers have the ability to post spot freight and dedicated freight. They could post it whether they own it or they're bidding on it with the customer. And they'll get bids back from different trucking companies. And so those carriers will bid on the freight. They get notified based on the lane preferences that they put in. So as we onboard trucking companies, they'll put in their preferred lanes, if you will. So they can say, I'm willing to pick up in Monterrey, Guadalajara, Querétaro, Mexico City, Aguascalientes, and Puebla. And I'll go anywhere in the Midwest, the Southeast, and the Northeast, crossing in Laredo. And so based on that information, they get notified. And they'll get notified of any new postings. They'll submit a bid. The brokers get notified, you know, that they got a bid. They can counter, they can accept, they can reject it, and they negotiate through the platform. And so the broker has the ability to communicate way more detail than you would traditionally see in a load board type experience. There's everything about the pickup locations and the requirements of the pickup to the commodity, to the way that it's packaged or how much it weighs, or the consistency of the volume if it's a recurring lane. And so brokers have the ability to communicate more information. Carriers have the ability to digest that information in a digital format instead of doing it over a phone call or email. And so we're trying to evolve how people are communicating ultimately and how they negotiate and do business. For cross-border freight, we've been able to quickly take off and do that.
All right. So Matt, just lots of questions to follow up there. Cross-border freight, why the focus on, and very specifically, correct me if I'm wrong, we're looking predominantly based on the cities you mentioned, we're looking predominantly US into Mexico and vice versa. Is that right?
It's Mexico to the US, Mexico to Canada, US, Mexico, Canada, Mexico. So anything going in or out of Mexico. Right now we support the vast majority of the border cities, the main one that we still have to onboard at this point. So we're literally right now, while we record this, going live with FAR in Brownsville in the Valley. We've already, you know, we started with Laredo in April when we went live, and then we opened up El Paso, Eagle Pass, and Del Rio a couple months after that. Then we did Otay Mesa and Calexico, and then most recently Tecate. And so the remaining ones were FAR in Brownsville, which is the Valley of Texas, and Nogales. And so FAR in Brownsville got opened up today, and Nogales will be in the next month or so. And so the goal right now is just expanding at the southern border and then starting to onboard carriers in Mexico next year so that we can continue to help build out that carrier network. And then ultimately, from a product standpoint, we're going to expand beyond being a load board and enable brokers and carriers to collaborate in other ways, whether it's how people manage, you know, that repeat freight through routing guides and how carriers and brokers communicate on a load when it's actually time to pick it up and track it and deliver it and communicate as it's at the border. And so we see this as much more than a load board. That's, you know, what we built in the first handful of months that we've been building our, you know, the business. But ultimately, long term, we want to add way more beyond that.
Sure. Now, one of the things you've mentioned a couple of times in the conversation is that this collaboration between carriers and brokers, right? Are you selling directly to BCOs or shippers, or are you very focused on the relationship between carriers and brokers?
Just brokers and carriers. So brokers, freight forwarders, 3PLs, logistics companies. You have to have an MC number, DOT number, or freight forwarder number unless you're in Mexico. But we've heard from a lot of shippers, obviously. And the cool thing is, you know, we have over 100 customers. They're all brokers. So I have over 100 companies I could potentially refer them to. But I just, with the way that we're building out this product and the way that I think freight brokers fit in this industry, I just had a debate with somebody like an hour ago about this. I think there's always going to be a need for logistics companies. And so I want to help them, you know, supercharge their operation. And if I were to try to go after shippers or beneficial cargo owners at the same time, then that would kind of break some trust with some customers. And so I would rather focus on building tools that enable freight brokers to maximize their margin on the freight that they're managing, and let them be experts in actually executing on the freight, and enable them with better tools than what they're used to using today.
Got it. Very cool. So Matt, where did the idea for Cargado come from? Is it just kind of you looked around and said, gosh, it feels like there's a lot of stuff happening in Mexico, or what was the idea there?
So my background is that I was at Coyote for a decade. I started the Mexico team while I was there by sheer dumb luck. So I had, let me think about this. So when I first started at Coyote as an intern, and I was tracking freight. And then once I, went through that first summer of tracking freight and calling on paper freight and all that stuff, ended up coming back for a second summer. And then I went to film school. And after film school, I moved to LA when I was 21 to try to make it in the film industry. And after a year of trying to make it in the film industry and not making it in the film industry, my dad called and said, I'm done paying for you to fuck around in LA. You can either get a job there and pay your own rent. You can move down to San Diego and work at our office there, or you can come back to Chicago and work at Coyote in Chicago, but not going to pay your rent anymore. It's time to get a job. And so I moved to San Diego in 2010, thinking that would be how, where I would just go make some money for a year and then go back up to LA. That was 2010. It's 2024. It's almost 2025, and I'm still in freight. So I ended up working on batteries initially. I was an ops rep on Exide and Interstate Battery Freight. And one of the carriers that I was working with was this company that was called DC Logistics that recently got rebranded as Mid Mountain Express or something like that. And they were based in Southern California, but they were the warehouse in Yuma, Arizona that was receiving all the truckloads of batteries that were coming into Yuma from Phoenix for one of those customers. And so one day I get a phone call from the guy at DC saying, hey, I'm seeing all these truckloads of batteries being delivered out of my warehouse. I have trucks in Phoenix. Can I haul that freight for you? And so I started booking them on that freight, and I was making, decent commission on it as a carrier rep while still operating Exide freight and interstate freight. And I started booking that freight, but we also had this freight from another customer that was a CPG brand that's well known that was shipping from the Phoenix area to Yuma, Arizona, but it was picking up at 8 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night. It was and it would take 4 hours to get loaded. These battery loads were first come, first serve, took 20 minutes to load, 20 minutes to offload. These other loads were 4 hours. So naturally DC didn't want to do those loads, but I got all this crap from everybody else in the West Coast carrier team because they thought I was going after the gravy and I wasn't willing to cover the tougher freight purely because I was just trying to be, I was trying to just make more commission. And that's not what I was doing. I was just booking what I could book. And so I realized, why don't I just go develop more carriers for that? And so I started calling more carriers in Yuma until I found a bunch of different carriers that were willing to haul the Phoenix area freight, whether it was batteries or CPG products. I was able to cover everything from the Phoenix area to Yuma by the end of a few months because I developed all these carriers in Yuma. But you open up the radius, you start searching for carriers within 100 miles of Yuma, you get Calexico. And so I started working with this carrier called TBM, based in Calexico. They were asking me for freight from, the PNW going back down to Southern California, but they also said that they would haul Mexico freight. I was like, we don't have any Mexico freight. I want nothing to do with it. Fast forward a couple of years, somebody sends out an email. I'm back in Chicago at this point, and I'm currently in our private fleet team, and I'm still booking TBM because I developed a good relationship with them. And somebody sends out an email about toothpaste coming out of Nuevo Laredo, going to New Concord, Ohio. And so I forwarded that email to TBM and said, can you guys haul this for us? And they started hauling it. And I made about $200 in commission on each of those loads that I moved. And so I started focusing on that and was making way more money. And so the next day, the COO from Coyote comes over to my desk and says, hey, you need to focus on private fleet stuff. And I said, well, I'm making more money booking Mexico freight than I am on private fleet. And he said, all right, well then Your new job is to go figure out how to grow Mexico. Go sit in the corner with this other guy, Clark. So I go sit in the corner with Clark. We start going after Mexico freight, and that's how we started the Mexico business there. And so I left in 2018, started my own company called Forager, cross-border digital freight brokerage. We raised capital, ultimately got acquired by Arrive in January of 2022. And so while I was at Arrive, and I know this is a long story, but this is
great, man. I mean, look, your history is phenomenal, right? And then like, I'm also looking at like all the places you've been an angel investor. And I'm like, yep, I'm a customer. Yep. I know those guys. Yep. I just met those guys. It's pretty fantastic. I'm enthralled, man.
I helped integrate Forager and Arrive, and effectively that became Arrive's Mexico business. We had big customers at Forager, like really big CPG, food and bev, automotive, like some very, very big brand name customers, and that all kind of transferred over to Arrive, which was cool. And so as the team, and like most of them are still there, which is great. That basically became Arrive's Mexico team, and the engineers that we had at Forager became part of Arrive's engineering team. And we helped, you know, transform their TMS to become something that can support cross-border freight. And there's a lot of changes that come into that stuff when you've built your own TMS. But ultimately, I helped integrate the team and then led their Mexico business. And while I was there, I remember talking to the VP of BizDev in Austin back in like May, I want to say, of 2023. And he said, hey, if you were doing Forager all over again, what would you do differently? And Forager, digital freight brokerage, we built a TMS, we built a shipper portal, we built a carrier portal. I remember as I was building Forager, like towards the end, while we were going through the M&A process, my dad I asked him to like look at things and tell me, you know, what we should do in terms of like a plan and ask for advice. And he said, you guys have an identity crisis. Like you're building a tech company and a freight brokerage at the same time, you can only do one or the other. And so I think back to that conversation as I'm talking to this guy in Austin, and he says, what would you have done differently? And so I said, well, I think I would have built the tech and not the freight brokerage. and I would have just focused on building the technology. And while what we're building with Cargado is not the same thing, the concept of like supercharging a logistics company in terms of how they manage their cross-border freight, how they communicate with their carriers, how those carriers do business with other brokers and all that stuff, like creating that network and the collective experience for everybody, I think has been fed from a combination of like that conversation with this guy, Duke, plus, you know, the time at Forager and my time being at Arrive and seeing how the insides of like a really, really strong, profitable freight brokerage operates, like, and where the opportunity is for helping with scale, you know, carrier sales to me is like one of the biggest things that I think you can make people more efficient in.
So Matt, one of the things you mentioned here, when you talked about kind of that identity crisis of, are we a tech company? Are we a brokerage? Do you think, and you might have to make a leap here, but if you look at companies like Uber Freight, Convoy, Next Trucking, Cargomatic, CDL 1000, all these companies that have tried to be a digital brokerage, do you think that's been kind of the big hurdle for these companies as they've kind of struggled? As we're talking, Uber just announced their earnings. Their Uber Freight was negative $19 million in EBITDA. Convoy, we all know the story. Next Trucking, FreightWaves wrote their obituary recently. You know, it's been bleak in the digital brokerage space.
Every freight brokerage uses technology. American Backhauler is at Express, and it's like the root of what C.H. Robinson uses now. And that was built back in the 80s and 90s. Like, so like everyone has technology, and they all, you know, some of them build their own tech. Some of them build their own tech stack. The problem that Convoy had and that, you know, some of the other digital freight brokerages have is the venture-backed kind of process. And like, you get valued as a venture-backed startup, and you get valued as if that revenue is like tech revenue. When somebody pays us money that comes into our business, that money just goes into the bank. Like, it just goes into the bank account. It does not like go back out to trucking companies. Like, we're not handling the transaction. We're getting paid for our software. And so we're a software company. The money that goes into a freight brokerage business, whether you're a Convoy or a Forager or a C.H. Robinson or Uber Freight or anybody, whether you spend $50 per user per month with like a Send TMS to run your business, or whether you're spending, you know, millions of dollars a year with some of the big enterprise CMS providers. Like, either way, you're spending money on technology. It's just whether you're building it or not. So like, everybody is tech or uses technology. It's just most of these companies are not valued like tech companies. They're valued like freight companies. And so they're valued the right way. The ones that aren't valued the right way, our work goes wrong. And so like, I just talked to a founder a little bit ago that's building effectively a digital freight brokerage. Says he's not going to be a digital freight brokerage, but today it's a digital freight brokerage. And I said, then if you get valued like you're not a digital freight brokerage and your valuation is already, you know, eight figures or whatever, and like, then, you know, you're already kind of like off kilter because right. Nobody's going to pay that dollar amount for you today. And I always, when I think about venture valuations, like there's got to be some tie to if somebody would buy the company for that price today or in the near future.
Got it. Makes sense.
So that's where you have to kind of balance that out. I would also add one more comment, by the way, about Convoy is, and like I've gotten the, you know, my co-founder came from Convoy. He built out Convoy for Brokers, Convoy Go, Rylan. A lot of our engineers came from Convoy. Our designer came from Convoy. Incredibly smart team. Like the talent that they built at Convoy and the products that they built there were great. The business model didn't quite line up the right way and they spent too much money, hired too many people. There's some other things, but like, and some bad luck, honestly, in some certain scenarios, but like they paved the way. Like if you think about when Convoy came into the market, it kind of freaked everybody out. It made everybody up-level their marketing, which I guess you should appreciate. And it also made everybody up-level their investment in technology and get a mobile app and all that other stuff. And so that got drivers to download mobile apps on their cell phones. And they were not used to doing that. And so because Convoy got, and Uber Freight and Transfix and LoadSmart, and like Transfix, they sold off their brokerage.
Right.
They invested in that technology. That up-leveled the entire industry. And so like, it's like a bad sacrifice, I guess, that had to happen with Convoy, but like that does help pave the way for, you know, us and for a lot of other companies to go build technology to help move the industry forward just with the right, you know, learning from the right lessons that we learned from like our last businesses.
Yeah, of course, man. Liz Ward, now at CMA CGM in ZBox, was an early Convoy person. She was on the podcast and kind of talked about the talent that came out of there. And in my previous life, I was with Next Trucking and I felt the same way. We had some tremendous and talented people. But Matt, this is a great transition into venture capital because you definitely have your angel wings, or yeah, let's call them angel wings here. Or Halo. You're heavily involved here, man. And the question I've got for you is, because we obviously met at Broker, we met at Broker Carrier Summit for folks who don't realize that. So many of the companies you've invested in, True North, Carrier Source, they're really focused. Do I have it right? Your thesis is that there's just a big old breakdown between brokers and carriers, and you're trying to make that circumstance easier.
I think there are breakdowns in lots of different parts. So first of all, when I think about what I'll invest in, and keep in mind, they're like tiny checks. I've not made tons of money or anything like that yet to like write huge angel checks. But like, I have to be able to help in some way or another, whether it's within the industry. It's got to typically be within the industry because that's where I've got connections. I've got relationships. We work with a lot of freight brokers. So like, I've introduced several, you know, startups I've invested in to some of our customers and stuff like that. It's got to be related to the space because I can help them that way. I can also help in terms of go-to-market strategy when it comes to the types of customers to call on or how to get in touch with a broker or a shipper or a carrier. So like GoodShip is a startup that I'm an advisor for, and like they're entirely focused right now on shipper products, but they're not trying to replace freight brokers. Like as long as you're not trying to replace freight brokers and like the product makes sense, like I can get excited about it, but it's got to be something that's you know, tangentially related, where I can help in one way or another. Otherwise, it's useless because it's not like I'm writing a big check that's going to like anchor the round.
Sure, got it. Matt, my favorite question to ask guests is if you're talking to a new or recent college grad who says, "I'm thinking about logistics" or "I'm thinking about supply chain," and you're a unique guy, man. You're a multi-time, you know, founder, a multi-time CEO. An investor, what is the piece of advice you'd give that kid?
Oh God. So there's What's funny is when I was at Coyote for a while there, I got all the new hires that would come through that would come sit with me for a little bit. And like a lot of them would have, you know, come sit with me for like 30 minutes and ask me questions about working at a brokerage and all that stuff. And this was, you know, I was a carrier rep, I was in private fleet, Mexico, whatever. I was always doing that stuff. And anytime I got a Spanish speaker, I was like, you're going to join our team. But what I would do during that is like try to reset their expectations a little bit, because a lot of the time it could be somebody with like a supply chain background and they're excited about redesigning, you know, some big, you know, CPG companies supply chain strategy. And I'm like, just so you know, your first job is probably going to be scheduling appointments at a facility for a customer. And then you're going to get yelled at by that customer for scheduling it wrong. And like, so I think everyone's got to start at the bottom when it comes to this industry. If you want to go into the freight industry, you got to start in like tracking or carrier sales or carrier ops. Like, I think if you want to build something in this space for this industry, you have to have called a customer and told them their truck's not going to show up when it was supposed to on like a Friday afternoon when they're supposed to be able to go home. And you have to be able to, you have to have called a carrier to, or an owner operator or a driver to tell them that they just deadheaded 250 miles and they're going to get a $150 TONU for doing that and see how they react to it. And if once you've done those two things, like you can do whatever you want in this industry, because you understand like what really drives this industry and like what makes people tick the wrong way. And so like, I would start at the bottom in terms of that. But like when it comes to where to go work, like if you want to work at a freight brokerage, you got to look at the leadership team of that brokerage. Like when I look at, you know, I've had a chance to talk to Drew Wilkerson from RXO. I think he's a phenomenal leader. So I was excited about the team at Coyote getting acquired by RXO. Same thing with Matt Pyatt at Arrive. I think Pyatt's a phenomenal leader, and that leadership team there is awesome. And so like when I think about, and you everybody's heard Andrew talk about leadership and all that stuff, and you saw how people reacted when he left Molo, how they would follow him anywhere. So like find the right leadership and the right brand of a business that you'll work for if you're going to go work at a brokerage. It's not just about like any brokerage that'll hire you. If you can get a job at multiple brokerages, like go for the one with the right leadership that will get you excited to grow your career there, because they'll set you up for success. You're not going to end up, you know, at a company that's going to go under if you find that stability.
Sure. Matt, final question. If somebody wants to reach out, learn more about Cargado, get in touch with you, et cetera, what's the best way to do so?
So anybody that wants to grow their Mexico business should ask their customers about it and then sign up for Cargado. And they can either do that by filling out the waitlist form on our website or send me a DM on LinkedIn or X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. You can basically find me on the internet. I'm usually the guy that's talking about Mexico freight.
He's Matt Silver. I'm Mike Bush. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.